way government regains the trust of its citizens is by telling the truth. There is no other way, no shortcut.
I call upon our government to open up like the Belgians have, the French have, Brazilians have, the Argentines, the Mexicans have all released their files. It's about time now that we do the same thing and become a part of this planetary community.
It is way past time for all of us to know what our own government knows instead of being kept in the dark by a policy denial.
The last time the Congress held a hearing addressing the extraterrestrial issue was 1968, 44 years of sightings ago. In those 4.5 decades, hundreds of thousands of new sightings have taken place. Government agency witnesses have come forward. Media coverage has expanded. Hundreds of documentaries have been produced. Thousands of books have been written. And yet the United States Congress has remained silent. So for a period of 5 days, at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., 2 blocks from the White House, 12 blocks from the Congress of the United States, we're going to conduct a citizen hearing on disclosure of an extraterrestrial presence engaging the human race. 40 to 50 witnesses of high rank and station, from military, from agencies, possibly from intelligence services, along with the top researchers in the world, will give 30 hours of testimony to 5 former members of the United States Congress.
So maybe the citizens' hearing has a chance to try to leverage open some of the truth about the fact that we're not alone in this universe, that we might actually begin to look at what we really are, what the true history of this planet is, and that might be what gets us into a future without self-destruction.
The motto of the citizen hearing is, if Congress won't do its job, the people will.
Greetings, everybody. Welcome to Galactic Roundtable, the countdown to disclosure. I'm so happy to be here with you today. Just to recap from yesterday, I got some stunning news yesterday that was so stunning that I couldn't talk when I got on the radio. So I rantate for the whole hour. But it was good because I had read into the record the history of Nisara. If you've never heard this, it's about 43 minutes long. It takes me to read the whole thing. And it explains back in 1986 who started the lawsuit, how it went to the Supreme Court, how the 75-page document Nisara Law was written, how it came into law. So that's in the archives. I encourage you to always go back to the archives at BBS Radio. They are the best internet station on the planet. I'm also YouTubing these because my audience is from other countries and English isn't their first language. It's easier for them to find a YouTube. So it's going to take me the weekend to catch up because it takes a lot of hours to process the tapes. Anyways, so yesterday we broke with programming, we reviewed Nisara Law, and so I skipped over my guest witness that I'm featuring from yesterday, and we'll do him later on. So today our guest witness is Donald Schmidt, and I'll talk about him in a minute. Before that, a very, very, very close friend sent me a video today that links the truth about 9/11 with disclosure. Always blown away, and I want you to hear this video. It's amazing. But first, before that, I want to share this channel. I posted it on galacticroundtable.org. It's by Solara on Ra, and Solara on Ra is a very gifted channel who I've been reading for years. But she has a subscription-only service. So you're not supposed to share her channels or, she doesn't want them distributed. She just wants people to pay and to read them. So I made one in all these years. I've never posted her but I've made an exception. So Solara on Ra, you're giving me one freebie, okay? This is a good channel. We're going to listen to this. Earth people, light people of Gaia, hear our words. In the fluctuating energies of this moment, you are required to make decisive actions and intentions. Listen, everybody. Unless you're fully enlightened and you have completely dissolved your ego, they are talking to you. So listen up. Most importantly, are you able to state with clarity and truth that you are in the new age of light on planet Earth? This new age is not birthing. It is birthed already. And for those who acknowledge this in their hearts, in their words, and in their actions, this is their reality. There are amongst you those who are unsure, who think and speak words of doubt, perhaps disillusionment, regarding the stage your planet has reached. You are the in-betweeners who sit on the fence and keep your options open. But you do not understand the impact you're having on the whole as you waver in your beliefs. You understand the concept of consensus reality, of the reality which exists as a result of a group of beings choosing certain beliefs about their world. This group dreams into being a world which looks and operates a certain way according to their beliefs. There are multiple realities existing simultaneously on your planet now. The one which is experienced by the majority of people is the one which reflects the beliefs of the masses. Creating a positive reality, one which is more peaceful, prosperous, and filled with love and light, does not come from desiring it. It comes from choosing it with all your heart, mind, and soul. Choose your reality, dear ones. Decide on it, and then act as if it's manifested already. What you will then experience is seeing love and light in the people and circumstances around you, attracting more peace and prosperity into your individual life. What you choose for yourself, you choose for humanity. What you believe and the actions you take based on those beliefs ripple into the consensus reality of your planet. Do not underestimate your power, dear ones, to manifest your chosen reality on Earth. Leave behind you the savior complex, which has caused so many of you to await the day when you will be saved by an external deity or extraterrestrial group. Leave behind you the victim complex, which has caused so many of you to be mired in a sense of hopelessness and helplessness. Life is not happening to you. You are creating it as you go. All around you, there are people awakening to this truth and taking control of their lives. All around you, there are groups of light workers coalescing to empower and assist each other on their journey of awakening. In all corners of the globe, communities are forming who choose a new way of living in harmony with the planet and each other. In the age of light, light exposes and dissolves darkness. Lies and manipulation are exposed daily. Deceit has been condoned in the past as a necessary evil of your society, but the new young ones will not allow this to continue. They speak up now, defiant of the consequences, and will continue to speak and embody the truth until the mechanisms of control are a distant memory amongst your people. Our message is to those of you who have doubts about the changes and the transition, those who believe that sitting on the fence is acceptable. We ask you to choose now. Choose to believe that the age of light has dawned and follow through with your actions so that your intentions, your words, and your actions are all positively geared towards a world based on love and peace. Your contribution matters. Your beliefs are part of the consensus reality. Harboring doubts and procrastinating about improving your own life affects all other beings on your planet. Do not miss your opportunity to make a difference. It is for this very reason that you are here at this time, right here, right now. Seize your moment, dear ones. The time is now. That's a great message. I really, really need you guys to be here with me with the Citizens Hearing on Disclosure. It's happening in 38 days. So I would like all of you to tune in on that. I have written to Stephen Bassett and asked him his permission to live stream from the hearing room on the radio program on those days. I haven't heard back from him. He's not answering only to himself. It's a big project, and I'm sure we'll hear back to see if we can do that. So here's another really cool tidbit. Things are really starting to open up regarding telling the truth. So the one we know as Rama Arjuna, he's on the radio with Tara and Rama. He tells us a story. He always talks about Larry, Curly, and Mo. And those are three NSA agents that were with Dick Cheney, working with him on the morning of 9/11. And then after that happened, the way Rama Arjuna tells the story, he says that King of Swords talked to them after that event and brought them to work in the light, brought them to the other side, brought them to start working with the White Knights. So Larry, Curly, and Moe are out there, and they tell their tales, and they used to work for the NSA, and they were 50 floors below the White House on the day of 9/11 with Dick Cheney, and they're eyewitnesses to that. So the new information I found today, because my friend sent it to me, was that Dick Cheney was in Colorado on 9/11. And why was he there? Because he was at the NSA astronaut headquarters, which is located in Colorado, across the highway from the Air Force Academy, inside a mountain. And he went there and he ordered all of the air defense systems on the East Coast turned off just for that day. And then he flew back to Washington, D.C. and got ready to go to the 50 stories below the White House. And he powered that joystick and he drove those missiles into the towers. And while he was doing that, George W. Bush was visiting his brother Jeb in Florida. He was reading from the book in the elementary classroom, My Goat, and King of Swords stood there and watched him do nothing for 7 minutes after he was told that this had started in New York City. And we have film of that, and he has this sick look on his face, and he's just sitting there doing nothing, doing nothing, doing nothing. King of Swords was there with him. I would like you to listen to this. A U.S. Major General has exposed the truth about this, that Dick Cheney was at the NSA on 9/11, and this completely links 9/11 to disclosure. Listen.
Major General Albert Stubblebine spent 32 years of his life serving the U.S. military. At the end of his career, he was in charge of the military's entire strategic intelligence around the world. The following interview follows the process General Stubblebine underwent as he realized and was able to prove that what had hit the Pentagon was not an aeroplane. This is his story.
I'm Major General Albert Newton Stubblebine III, U.S. Army retired. And I spent 32 years in the military. And ended up as a Major General. And my last assignment, I was responsible for all of the Army's strategic intelligence forces around the world. Got sent to Korea early in my life, and I'd been there about a week. And my boss, who was a full colonel, said, "Report to the SYNC." I said, "The SYNC is the commander in chief of all forces." So I reported him and saluted. He said, "Young man, you are going to redo the North Korean order of battle. Order of battle. Order of battle." I didn't have a clue what that meant. Not a clue. So we went down the same walkway that goes to the mess hall. Then I'd pass this Quonset hut every time I'd go on a meal. And he unlocks the door. We go in. He said, "Go over there and take a look." Okay. Walked over and took a look. Holy smokes, because what was there was SR-71 photography. Now, for those who are not familiar, the SR-71 was an early, very high altitude reconnaissance plane. And it was taking photographs anywhere where they needed high altitude photography. I looked at this, wow, because I process my information visually. I'm a very high visual kino, which is a visual that I process my information by, but I test it kinesthetically by feeling. But I'm primarily a visual. You can see the entire structure of what the North Korean army had created on the other side of the mountain. And that result was that I did put the North Korean order of battle in perspective, presented it to the SYNC before I left, and it became his tool for making decisions of where he placed his troops, what he did, how he organized for whatever was coming. Unfortunately, nothing ever happened. However, he had the information from my essentially map reading, or photo reading, photo interpretation reading, so that he could make the right decision on how to handle the situation. I actually was responsible for all of the Army's strategic imagery. And when I say imagery, that's not just photo, it's radar, it's all of the different kinds of imagery that you can have. I was responsible for all of the Army's strategic units that do that kind of work. Let me fast forward. That brings me to the real intention of where I'm trying to go with this. 9/11 happens. At the time, my wife and I were in Hawaii. We were attending a conference, and I think it was about 3 o'clock in the morning, 3:30 in the morning. I get a phone call, and it's one of my officers. I'd retired by that time. It was one of my officers who had served under me, and a fabulous officer. And she said, "Sir, the United States is at war." I said, "See, what are you talking about?" She said, "The United States is at war." I said, "Come on, see, what have you been drinking?" She said, "Listen to me. Go turn on the television. The United States is at war." I said, "Oh, you know," I still didn't believe. I go turn on the television. Bingo, I see the towers coming down. I said, oh, that's a joke. I switched channels, tower's going down. I switched channels, tower's going down. I said, oh, my God. So I thanked her for the information. I turned to Raymond, and I said, you watch. I guarantee you right now that the information about that attack was in the system and somebody missed it. Very important. The information was there to know that that attack was coming, and somebody didn't see the signals. That's from my own personal intelligence background. All of my experience after that in the intelligence world tells me that when something that big goes by, somebody missed the information. So I was a believer. Absolute believer that the attack was a terrorist attack, that it was all done by other forces. And after that period, my wife began to put pieces together, and she said, I don't think that attack was done by the enemy, the terrorists that you indicated.
I just want to interrupt you here for 1 second, everybody. I just want to say that on that morning, I had the news going in the background when the kids were getting ready for school, and I didn't see the first plane go in because Brian Gumbel brought that video up after it happened, and he started reporting on this emerging urgent news. I did watch a second missile go in, and I watched the rest of the day. When I was growing up on Long Island, my mother worked at JFK Airport for Lufthansa. She was a cargo agent. And I knew when I saw the second missile go in, it was not terrorists. And how I knew that was there's no air activity above South Manhattan. It's not allowed. It's a no-fly zone. It's been not allowed since forever. No disabled aircraft would be in that area.
I said, you're wrong. She said, I don't believe it. I said, you're wrong. And so she began to find bits and pieces of information. And she would present them to me. And I said, no, 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 not my government. My government would not tell a lie like that. And I just disbelieved. I was so ingrained in my belief system that I could not believe, I literally could not believe that anybody but a sort of Arab terrorist could do something like that. And then one day, I saw a picture. It was a photograph of the Pentagon and the hole in the Pentagon. And I looked at it and I said, wow. And I looked at it again. I said, something's wrong. Something's wrong with this picture. Then I kept looking. Then I began to not look at it just at a glance, but to study the photograph itself. What's wrong with this picture? Why is your belly saying, my kinesthetic aspect of my processing system saying, something wrong with that picture? Well, there was something wrong. And so I analyzed it, not just photographically. I did measurements. I did all kinds of it. I checked the plane, the length of the nose, where the wings were. I did all of the measurements. I took the measurements of the Pentagon, the depth of the destruction in the Pentagon. Conclusion, airplane did not make that hole. I went public at the time. I am the highest ranking officer, I believe, that has ever gone public. That whatever that story was, the official story was not true. Now, I was very careful not say what it was because I couldn't prove it. I was careful to say it was not the airplane that did that because I can prove that it was not the airplane. In the hole, however, was a turban. Looked like the turban from a missile. I can't prove that. I don't know. But there was something there that did not look like the engine from an airplane, but did look like a turban from a missile. Later, I saw another photograph of one of the sensors on the outside of the Pentagon. Now, all of the sensors had been turned off, which is kind of interesting, isn't it? That day, why would all of the sensors around the Pentagon be turned off? Ooh, that's strange. Just I don't care what the excuse is, that's strange. There happened to be one that apparently did not get turned off. And in that picture, coming in, flying into the Pentagon, you see this object. And it obviously hits the Pentagon. When you look at it, it does not look like an airplane. Later, sometime later, after I'd gone public, that imagery was changed. It had, it got a new suit around it that now looked like an airplane. But when you take the suit off, it looks more like a missile. Let me go back to the next, I think, very important piece of information. The amount of energy required to melt the girders, the steel in the tower, cannot be gotten to a melt point with the fuel that was in the airplane. Not possible. So any melting did not occur as a result of the hit from the airplane. Point. I call it dot, okay? Dot. When you look at the tower coming down, what you see are, at each floor, successive puffs of smoke. Puff, 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 all the way down. What are the puffs of smoke coming from? Well, they claim they're from the collapsing floors. No. Those puffs of smoke are controlled demolitions. That's exactly what they are, because that's exactly how they work. And so the fact that the airplane hit, it did not cause that collapse of the building.
Just interrupt here for a second, guys. If you go to galacticroundtable.org, I pulled photos of what he's talking about that actually show the little puffs, pop, 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 going from floor to floor on the towers. And I also pulled an aerial shot that day of the Pentagon where the smoke is still coming up from the penetration of the wall of the Pentagon, but there's no airplane there. It's an aerial shot. Nothing there. And if you go through Google Images, Pentagon 9/11, you're going to see that turbine he's talking about. Here you go.
The collapse of the building was caused by controlled demolition. Fact. Building 7. Silverberg, I believe, is the name of the owner. Was on video, on a video, and you could see Building 7. You could literally see it. And there was a fire in Building 7. There's no doubt about that. No airplane hit it. I assume that the fire came from some debris, but I'm not even sure of that. But in the lower right-hand corner of the building was a fire. not a very big fire, didn't appear to be out of control, certainly was in a small part of the building. But then he is heard on the video, okay? And he says, pull it. And then the building collapsed. What does pull it mean? What are the words pull it mean? Let me tell you, that's the order for controlled demolition. That is the phraseology that's used for blowing up something. And that's when Building 7 blew up. I understand, I can't prove this, but I've heard that he had just reinsured the building for damages caused by such things as airplanes hitting it or some objects hitting it that had not been in the original contract. I can't prove that. I don't know, but I've heard that. There was another data bit. All of the air defense systems in that part of the country had been turned off that day. All of the air defense systems had been turned off. Why? Apparently because the vice president was out in Colorado and he ordered them turned off.
Okay, that's all he says. All he says was Dick Cheney was in Colorado. Let me tell you what I know about the NSA. There are superficial issues which relate to NASA flights, NASA, NASA flights, and deeper questions which deal with NSA flights, which were occurring 8 years before the first astronauts did arrive. In fact, those NSA craft and ET crafts were parked there on the moon when NASA arrived. So there were both fake and real flights. However, only the NSA flights, with the help of negative ETs back then, were allowed to continue. NASA was thrown off the moon by both negative ETs and NSA and told not to come back. The secret space program uses an academy across the highway inside a mountain from the Air Force Academy. The real NSA astronauts fly the ultra top secret TR-3B Aurora and other anti-gravity equipped craft like the Shark helicopter used to take out the engines on Flight 1459. The fourth or fifth generation anti-gravity quantum effects craft make routine flights to the moon and Mars as often as weekly. The newest ones have cloaking modes and quantum lifting, descending directly up and down thousands of feet or more, disappearing from the runway and reappearing directly overhead below within 5 seconds. This is the secret space program, everybody. This is why we have to have disclosure. So let's see what else he has to say. Okay, it bumped me out, but I know where I was because I've listened to this several times this morning already. Here we go. Coming back.
That I don't know, but I've heard that. There was another data bit. All of the air defense systems in that part of the country had been turned off that day. All of the air defense systems had been turned off. Why? Apparently because the vice president was out in Colorado and he ordered them turned off. Why would you turn off all of the air defense systems on that particular day unless you knew something was going to happen? It's a dot. It's information. But strange that everything got turned off that day. Dot. There was an exercise that was designed for the air defense systems that was an attack on the towers by airplanes. Isn't that strange that we had an exercise that mimicked what really happened? Strange that we had planned an exercise that was exactly what happened. And at the same time, the air defense systems were turned off. Don't you find that strange? I find that weirdly strange. Dot, yeah, just a piece of information. But how does it correlate with everything else? See, so you see the dots. You have all of these dots. They're just bits of information. But that's exactly how the intelligence world works. You get a bit of information here, you get an information here, a bit here, and a bit here. And pretty soon you got a picture. To me, what does the picture say? Picture says that what we heard and were told in the newspapers, the media, was not the real story. If there's enough doubt in the official story, where the stories are absolutely not consistent with what happened, that they paint a different picture than the one that was given to the media, how easy is it for you to shift your belief system from I totally believe in my government, God, what's going on? And that's exactly where I went.
Listen, everybody, we know what was happening that day. Why the government would pull an operation against its own people. Alan Greenspan was at the towers that morning. The computers were in the North Tower on the first and second floor that were going to convert all the banks over to the treasury bills. And Alan Greenspan was going to start the public announcements for Nasara law, which is a provision of the law that it must be publicly announced first and then enacted. And those bombs went off that leveled the lobby in the first and second floors. We know what was happening on 9/11, why the government would do that. They were going to announce Nasara law. They wanted to stop it.
And all of this because my belief system, so strong from age 5 when I can remember, standing on the parade ground at attention without anybody telling me to do that at West Point. I did it because I wanted to do it, because I believed. And going to the military academy, serving, defending. The real story was, or I have a question, I guess. The real story to me is, who was the real enemy? Who participated in this? Who planned this attack? Why was it planned? Real terrorists, the people in Arab clothing, or were the real people that planned this, the people sitting in the authority in the White House?
The debate surrounding the official story of September 11th is over. The facts are there for anyone who cares to do their research. We need to start asking ourselves another question. If our governments are capable of carrying out such a horrific act against us, what else are they capable of?
Nothing, because we're done with them. We're going to have full galactic disclosure now. And we're going to have the enactment of Nasara law. Believe it. So let's move on. I would love to feature a new witness for the Citizens Hearing on Disclosure. It'll be in Washington, D.C. at the National Press Club on April 29th through May 3rd, where 40 or 50 witnesses will testify over a period of 30 hours to past members of Congress. about these events. Today, we're looking at Donald Schmidt's work. He's the former co-director of the J. Allen Hynek Center for UFO Studies, CUFOS, where he served as the director of special investigations for 10 years. Before that, he worked as a special investigator for the late Dr. J. Allen Hynek and as the art director for the International UFO Reporter. He is a graduate of Concordia University and the author of dozens of articles on UFOs, as well as the co-author of three books, UFO Crash at Roswell, The Truth About the UFO Crash at Roswell, and Witness to Roswell. So obviously he's involved in the facts surrounding Roswell, and I know we've talked a lot about that recently, but we're going to do this again today because he gives a different angle. And, you know, his book, UFO Crash at Roswell, was an international bestseller. And Roswell really is the beginning of the truth embargo. And so I think it's important that we review this. Here he is speaking at MUFON LA. This was October of 2012. Don Schmidt.
Well, it's great to be back. I've had so many wonderful experiences here in Los Angeles through the years. And as Steve was mentioning, especially dating back to early 90s when we were first working on the very first book on Roswell that we had written, UFO Crash at Roswell. International bestseller. It would become then the impetus of the Roswell movie, which Steve had mentioned. And we had the good fortune of being on set, working as far as consultants, when we filmed all the exteriors in Bisbee, Arizona, all the interior filming we did in North LA. But what was most flattering as well as inspirational was how the cast and crew treated the subject. Now we're talking about a movie, made for TV movie, produced by Showtime, which starred Carl McLaughlin, Martin Sheen, Dwight Yoakam, Xander Berkeley, Kim Greist, Charlie Martin Smith, Doug Worth, Peter McNichol. I mean, we just had a wonderful cast from top to bottom. Our executive producer was Paul Davids, who I know has even spoken to the group here. And our director was Jeremy Kagan. So we were forewarned that, you know, as writers of the book, that we would be looked at, you know, as a bunch of groupies that on the set of the motion picture that we would, you know, be treated as though we were nothing more than just fans trying to observe all the activities in the production of the movie. And I could not have been more pleasantly surprised the moment we arrived. It was like, the writers are here. Let's get it right. And I don't care if it was Martin Sheen or especially Dwight Yoakam and Xander Berkeley. I mean, every opportunity they had, they wanted to talk about Roswell. They wanted to ask us questions about Roswell. And it didn't matter that we were still in the earlier stages of our investigation at that time. But nonetheless, they were so thrilled by the possibility that what if it was all true? What if indeed in 1947 something extraordinary did crash, that the government did take it into its possession and has been covered up ever since? And how many have seen the movie? I can't see anybody. just I'm looking into the lights. And so, but I see that a lot of hands haven't gone up. Now, one of the challenges we had in even putting together the script was a finale, because Roswell, as it still is an ongoing proactive investigation, very fluid. In other words, we have yet to still make a final determination. And yet, back in the fall of 93, when we filmed the movie, as I described, we were just getting started. And nonetheless, we still had to come to a climax, a finale in the picture. And it was something that, whether it's UFOs in general, but in this case, more specifically, Roswell. How do you put a cap to it? How do you draw the final curtain when it's something that still remains a mystery? So we decided that we were going to demonstrate the dilemma that all of us as UFO researchers face, and principally how all the witnesses have to rely on us to convey and to demonstrate the information they have. And the ultimate problem that they all face. So in the movie, we have a deep throat undercover individual portrayed by Martin Sheen. And Kyle MacLachlan is portraying the intelligence officer who was originally assigned to investigate the flying saucer crash back in 1947. And he's going to go public. He's thinking of finally going public. He's dying of emphysema at that time. And what else can they do to him? It's almost 50 years. So he's just going to tell the world what happened. So the Martin Sheen character breaks him away. And they meet privately in a hangar. And he would go on describing everything. He tells him it's all true. The UFO phenomena. We have captured actual flying saucers. We have bodies. There has been an actual interaction as far as with the beings piloting the UFOs. And they have worked as far as trying to even reconfigure our DNA and so on. So he goes on, thanks, telling him all of this. So then the Martin Sheen character, after essentially telling him it's all true, the Kyle MacLachlan character finally asks, well, what did I see out in that desert back in 1947? It's a classic example of the building up of a straw man and then tearing it down. Because then what the Martin Sheen character says, why, Jesse, the name of the character, that was just a weather balloon. He's just told him it was all true, but now it's just a weather balloon. And he retorts, no, it wasn't. I held it right in my hands. And the agent says back to him, you go ahead. You tell the whole world, you have no proof. And that's what we all face, investigating the UFO phenomenon. We're still chasing that elusive physical evidence, that proof that will, you know, demonstrate beyond a shadow of anyone's imagination that we're dealing with a genuine, true life phenomenon. The final scene of the movie is Jess Marcel with his wife and son, actually out at the very crash site, just walking around looking for anything that might even an old tire track, footprints, anything that would show that it really did happen. So you see how when you know your own reality, you know what you actually experienced firsthand, and yet you can't even prove it to your own family. You can't even prove it as far as to anyone who expresses any doubt. So you live a life of just constant questioning of your own faculties. And that's why it's so significant that in now over 20 years, we've interviewed over 600 people directly or indirectly involved with what happened back in Roswell in 1947. And down to a man, woman, and child. And hence the title, this was the number one selling UFO book in the world in 2007 and 2008. And unlike the previous accounts, this is where we allow the witnesses to finally describe and tell their own stories. Go on the record, down to the deathbed testimony. Now, I'm sure all of you know that a deathbed testimony is admissible in a court of law. It's accepted as physical evidence. Now, the bunkers would suggest that, well, because it's about UFOs, because it's about Roswell, it can't be considered reliable. Okay, if we're going to throw out the deathbed testimony on Roswell, then how about we throw out the deathbed testimony on every other case that has ever been before a judge and jury, accepted as admissible testimony or information in a court of law? You can't have it both ways. If we accept Roswell or we discount Roswell, we have to treat all other such eyewitness testimony in a similar fashion. That is in our favor, because the witnesses are, again, all describing the same event, the same details, the same information. I'm going to jump around a little bit, but I want to just go over some information before we get into the actual storyline once again. And there's been a recent documentary that's aired on National Geographic. And you also have the UFO Chasers, also on the National Geographic. When we filmed this documentary back in January, they demonstrate that they found an actual piece of physical evidence, a remnant out of the crash site. And they claim that they found a button, a metal button, suggesting that the military was out there back in 1947. Well, I want to state for the record that we never took them to the correct site. For obvious reasons, because every time we worked with them in the past, it's been a hatchet job. So we thought we'd show them who was still running the show. And that they would turn around and then claim that they found something. They found remnants. And they were not even at the correct site. So this is investigative journalism. So in other words, if they can't get it right on the site, they recreate and they shoot something afterwards. That's just one example. And I'm sure most of you in the California, the Los Angeles area, are no strangers to Annie Jacobson's book on Area 51. The fact that one lone reference, one appendix on Roswell became the number one selling point for that book. And a suggestion that what had actually crashed in New Mexico in 1947 was nothing more than a German design Horton Brother Flying Wing, recovered by the Russians, the fall of Berlin, and that Dr. Death, Joseph Mengele, who was also captured by the Soviets, was forced to take 13-year-old children, mutate them into appearing like alien beings, and this flying wing was then flown into New Mexico, where it was crashed to convince us that we were being invaded from outer space. Yeah, I laughed too, especially at all the journalists who took it seriously, especially that a so-called journalist would even present this as being a legitimate explanation as to what actually transpired back in 1947. And once again, it was simply a case of anyone doing their homework. The Soviets never did recover any flying wings. The only one that was recovered at all is presently at the Smithsonian in Washington. Joseph Mengele was never captured. He managed to escape down to South America, where he lived out the balance of his life. As far as 13-year-old children serving as the crew of any type of aircraft which crashed in New Mexico, I would simply ask, which 13-year-old was flying? And yet this is what, again, the media latches onto. And I know it was especially prevalent here in Los Angeles. But it just demonstrated that once again, as we refer to them, we call them the theories of the month. Anybody can come up with any hypothetical explanation as to what happened, but it's never based on any eyewitness testimony. It's never based on any investigation. It's like, I wonder if this one will stick. Another prominent explanation is that we staged the entire event, the United States government, to make the Soviets believe we had had the recovery of a captured flying saucer. But again, it's never with any information, any evidence, any eyewitnesses. If anything, it continues to demonstrate that nobody believes the government, who is presently up to 4 official explanations.
Hearing the story told by Don Schmidt really puts more depth to it for us, because his research is wide and he spent his whole life working on this. So I hope you'll be tuned in live stream, if you can't be there, for all week to hear these witnesses give their testimony. He says that the United States government now has officially 4 different explanations for what happened at Roswell. The first 2 being, you know, the real explanation, that a UFO crash, and the second one being that it was an air balloon. So it's time that we end all of this now, everybody. I think what I'd like to do today, if it's all right with everyone, is I would like to go a little bit over time. And so if you still have time and you can hang in there and stay tuned to the best internet radio station on the planet, I'd like to extend the show today. This is the part of the program where I like to go into the sacred galactic scripture. And I can show you in every religion, in every aeon of time, going back thousands of years, how our galactic ancestors left notes for us. They wrote it down to tell us that we are galactic citizens in a galactic society on Earth. And when we know that, then it makes waiting for disclosure intolerable. So today I would like to read something from the Corpus Hermeticum. And this is the Gnostic teachings. This is a translation from G.R.S. Mead, from probably from the 1920s. I want to touch on chapter 4, which is called The Cup or the Monad. And if you don't know, then the monad is a word that means your highest self. It's all of your avatars merged together in your highest form, and it's also called the Atma body. And this is what the Corpus Hermeticum has to say about your I Am Self. This short text gives an unusually lucid overview of the foundations of Hermetic thought, the stress on rejection of the body and its pleasures, and on the division of humanity into those with mind and those without, are reminiscent of the of some of the so-called Gnostic writings of the same period. The idea that the division is a matter of choice, on the other hand, is a pleasant variation on the almost Calvinist flavor of writings, such as the Apocalypse of Adam. Number one, Hermes. This is Hermes speaking. Hermes Trigenitus, also known as Thoth from Egypt, remember? With reason, logos, not the hands, did the world maker make the universal world, so that thou shouldst think of him as everywhere and ever being, the author of all things, and one and only, who by his will all beings hath created. This body of him is a thing no man can touch or see or measure, a body inextensible, like to no other frame. 'Tis neither fire nor water, air nor breath, yet all of them come from it. Now being good, he willed to consecrate his body to himself alone, and set its earth in order and adorn it. Number two, so down to earth he sent the cosmos of this frame divine, man, a life that cannot die, and yet a life that does, that dies, and, or all other lives and over cosmos too, did man excel by reason of the reason, logos, and the mind. For contemplator of God's works did man become. He marveled and did strive to know their author. Reason, logos, indeed, O Tat, among all men hath he distributed, but mind not yet, not that he grudgeth any, for grudging cometh not from him, but hath its place below, within the souls of men who have no mind. Tat, why then did God, O Father, not on all bestow a share of mind? Hermes says, he willed, my son, to have it set up in the midst of four souls, just as it were a prize. And what hath he set it up? He filled a mighty cup with it, and sent it down, joining a herald to it, to whom he gave command to make this proclamation to the hearts of men. Baptize thyself with this cup's baptism, that heart can do so. Thou that hast faith, thou canst ascend to him that hath sent down the cup. Thou that dost know for what thou didst come into being. He's saying that God sent down this cup filled with the divine mind and invited man to drink it, and the cup sits there, and if man's going to pick up the cup and drink it, is his choice. As many then as understood the herald's tidings and doused themselves in mind became partakers in the gnosis, and when they had received the mind, they made perfect men. You see, when you join yourself with divine mind, you've become enlightened and you know everything. But they do not understand the tidings, these, since they possess the aid of reason only and not mind, are ignorant wherefore they have come into being and whereby. They're saying, you know, that unless they drink from the cup and they become enlightened, they forget that they're galactic. The senses of such men are like irrational creatures, and as their whole makeup is in their feelings and their impulses, they fail in all application of, they do not wonder at those things which really are worth contemplation. These center all their thought upon the pleasures of the body and its appetites, in the belief that for its sake man hath come into being. Drink wine and be merry. But they who have received some portion of God's gift, these, tat, if we judge by their deeds, have from death's bonds won their release. For they embrace in their own mind all things, things on the earth, things in heaven, and things above the heaven. If there be aught, and having raised themselves so far, they sight the good, and have sighted it. They look upon their sojourn here as a mischance, and in disdain of all, both things in body and the bodiless, form and non, form and formless, they speed their way unto that one and only one. So I'm going to end it there because we're running late. I really love looking at these scriptures from different religions because it really shows us that they're all saying the same things. It's truly beautiful. So we've been talking a little bit each day about collective consciousness, and this goes back to Solara on Ra's channel that I started with. And the deliverer of her channel was saying, if you doubt that Earth has ascended, which is one of the messages coming out of Hollow Earth, which I talked to them on the phone about and told them I strongly disagree that Earth has already ascended, and that's why I won't post the messages. And then there was a lot of people that were really happy with a message today or this week from Saint Germain, from supposedly Saint Germain, saying, and I was talking all about the third dimension, the fourth dimension, the fifth dimension, and I refused to post that. And I don't understand why people are so happy about it. It's nonsense. Solara on Ra was saying, you know, her channel was saying, get with it. We're here. Let's act like we're in the fifth dimension. And the way we do that is by tuning into cosmic consciousness. So I want to share something from Deepak Chopra. It's very short, about cosmic consciousness. But he explains it as good as anyone else that I know. He was the one who contacted me through a friend. And he was the one who told me to look at the sacred galactic scripture. And he was saying to me that when the Dalai Lama writes his book about a plurality of faiths, and without that we won't have world peace, and when Deepak Chopra writes his own books, that neither one of them can say that they are galactics, even though they both fully know they are. And he said, Beth, you're an exception. You can go out there and say you're a galactic, and you need to do that. And that's how these books came about, because he contacted me and gave me the suggestion. So, let me set up this video. Here it is. Here's an ad, sorry. All right, here we go.
Places like Sedona or right. All the people that you interview, I mean, there is a lot of so-called channeling, right?
Exactly.
And so what are people channeling? They're channeling something from, we would say, the matrix. Mm-hmm.
The non-local consciousness.
The non-local consciousness, which is a confluence of probability clouds with mm-hmm. thought forms and embodies histories of collective experience, collective karma, a collective revelation. So, you know, these days we know about it a lot more than we did then. A human nervous system, when it's in a state of innocence and purity, can do that, obviously. I think the time has come to get over our psychosis and stop trying to solve a problem at the level of consciousness at which it was created.
That's right.
Because that's what you keep doing over and over and over again.
So
and
what's what, the problem. The problem is war. This is my land. This is your land. And how do we get to the next level?
You know, if you've done any work with John Beck and spiral dynamics, right. You're familiar with that,
yes,
right?
Yes.
That's where you have to go. You have to say, what level of consciousness is this conflict arising at? What level of consciousness do we move up to? And when you move up to a new level of consciousness, there's diminution of the tension that arose from the last level of consciousness. So, you know, instead of saying Arabs and Jews, let's say Semites. Okay, they're both Semites, right?
Right.
Let's say cousins. Let's say same father. Let's see the universal principles that actually unite them. And then move up to another level and another level. Because ultimately, Alan, we've all got to transcend our national, our racial, our ethnic boundaries. You know, as long as you think of yourself as a Jew, and I think of myself as a Muslim, we have a problem.
Right. So you are a really, I think, great spokesman for this non-local awareness.
Identity.
Yes.
Am I a citizen of my tribe?
Mm-hmm.
Am I a citizen of my nation? Am I a citizen of this planet? Or am I a cosmic citizen? You know, I need to, aham brahmasmi, I need to get to that level where I can see that I'm a citizen of the cosmos.
That's the level we have to pull the whole planet to. How do we know when God is speaking through us? Or maybe it is all the time.
You're inspired. There's no going back. It's like a child that is born, cannot return to the womb. And you not only change yourself, you transform other people. And you move in the direction of truth, goodness, beauty, harmony, evolution, love, compassion, kindness, joy, equanimity, peace of mind.
So tell me, how are you doing that in your life? Personally, what goes on?
Oh, it's my life. I mean, I spend 2-3 hours every day in meditation. I meditate sometimes through the night. I visit these people in my consciousness. I'm now going to do a book called When God Spoke, not the one with Malad Noy, who's Stephen Hawking's co-author.
Right.
That's a science book.
Right.
But I'm doing a book about when God spoke. So I'm looking at every saint in the Western and Eastern tradition, from St. John of the Cross, so St. Teresa of Avila, Catherine of Genoa,
right.
Lao Tzu. I'm going to visit their consciousness and speak through them.
Well, even Amici,
sure.
Have you met
yeah,
her?
There's
divine consciousness.
Yeah.
But actually, through every artist, there's a divine.
There's a particular frequency domain of the divine, sure.
There is actually through everything we say, like, where is the divine not speaking,
right.
Is what Rumi would say, right?
There's nothing other than God.
Very good. Now listen. We all have access to the divine. In human embodiment, that's what we do. We're channeling the divine all the time. So why are you sending me emails forwarding a channeling from a supposed Saint Germain talking about the third dimension, the fourth dimension, and the fifth dimension? Why does that get you excited? When you're sending me that email, I'm wondering if you have any discernment at all, and I'm knowing that you're not who you're saying you are. Additionally, if you send me an email saying you have a miserable life, you don't have any money, you have all these problems, taking away your house, you have so many bills, they keep calling you all day long, you blame it on your husband, you blame it on your wife, you blame it on your mother and father, you blame it on this, you blame it on that, and you're doing everything you can, you tell me. And then what I'm going to say to you is two things. Ask yourself, why are you allowing yourself to live in a miserable life? And why aren't you doing anything about it? If you find those two answers, you won't be living a miserable life anymore. So when you're going through reading these channels and saying, ha ha, this is a great message. Ha ha, I love the Hollow Earth. Ha ha, I love all this stuff. I want to say to you, look. Listen, feel it in your heart. If it's not saying that we're ascended, we're in the fifth dimension, and we're moving forward with disclosure, announcements, and enactment of Nasara law, it's not true. And if any haughty and if any Hathi light worker wants to put their hands on the hips and have a fight with me and bring their ego mind in front of me and argue about this, while they're forwarding me an email about love and telling me to post it on Galactic Roundtable, you are the problem. You are the problem. Stop it. Okay, I said enough. Now, what I'd like to do now is very serious. I want to do an invocation for disclosure. We've done this before, and I want to do it again. I want to raise the vibrations higher. I set an intention with everyone listening that in the month to come and the weeks that follow, that we see disclosure and announcements and the enactment of Nisara law. I had posted a channel about Sananda speaking and saying that all of these things are happening. And he wrote dates and he said certain things are happening on certain dates. And one of them was March 21st, which is today. He said the Keshi Foundation will be releasing their technologies on the countries who had filled out the World Peace Treaty, that they'd be releasing their technologies on March 21st. And there's an update on that from the Keshi Foundation, and I posted it on Galactic Roundtable while we've been here on the radio together. So know that these things are happening. So please join me for this invocation, and then we'll be complete for the day. Thank you for everybody for being here with me, and thank you for listening.
Greetings, everybody. This is Elizabeth Trotwin. I invite you to this planetary invocation. We invite you, we invoke you, we open to this activation, which received that will instantly awaken fully the 12-strand DNA and reconnect the genetic codings to uplift the veil of duality and activate the full recalling and remembering of ancient sacred knowledge in the fields of astrogenetics, genetic design and sequencing, bioengineering, geomancy, new archaeology and astronomy, new energy transformation, and technological scientific information. The pulse transmitter will, in presence and silence, be able to be transferred to those who are ready to receive. A conduit of the third heaven gateway information, so that those that are magnetized to receive will be able to create and develop this new technology. Ways to assist the rescuing of this planet and ensure simultaneously that this is done with love, ease and grace, balance and harmony. Please replay this invocation daily as more become prepared. It activates them in that time, in that space. Namaste. Supreme Creator, sages, seers, highest divine beings, and all the divine animals. Sangha Chadvam, Samvadadvam, Samvomanasi Jantam, Samano Prana, Samano Mantra, Samati, Samano Mana, Samano Mantravi, Samano Akuti, Samano Hiryani Va, Sa Hiryam Sa, Chittame Sam. Together, singing, pronouncing, and invoking this perennial mantra with all the creatures listening in silence, that perennial unity of soul prevailing in all the creatures. The pronouncement of self. The declaration of oneness. Bringing all the unity of all diversity of all creation. My mind. My heart, my senses, my psyche, my citta, they'll work in harmony. They may tune to divine wholeness. Let my loved one work with me in harmony. Walk with me. Communicate with me. Speak with me. Let my friends feel my love. Feel my energy. Let my community see my harmony and oneness and unity. And let my community and society see and walk in harmony, in peace. Let my country awake. To work together in harmony for the betterment of my country and the world. Let the humanity coordinate, exchange, and share fairly and justly. Let no one be unhappy in this world. Let no one suffer. Let no one be ignorant. Let no one feel small and neglected. Let no one feel that she is not whole. Let there be peace within my heart, in my family, in my community, in my country, and in the world. Let there be light. Let there be harmony. Let there be prosperity all over. All around. Let no one be unhappy. Let all walk towards the wholeness. Let all have strength to walk on that path. Path of enlightenment and path of liberation and path of salvation and path of nirvana. Let no one feel deprived of that divine right, not only your birthright, but right eternal, right perennial. When my heart, when my soul filled with amrita, the nectar of bliss, when I am fulfilled, I radiate the fulfillment to others. When I am at peace, I can share my peace to others. When I am happy, I can share my happiness to others. When I am enlightened, I can share my enlightenment to others. When I am joyful and blissful, I can share my joy and bliss to others. Let my heart be filled with divine nectar, divine energy. Let it be purity. Let there be light. Oh, you, all the gods of the universe, those who have achieved that state of consciousness, I invite you. I pray to you. I beg you. I call you to come and be with me today. Help me. Walk with me. Take me there where you are. I invoke that power, that energy. Oh, Dev, oh, Supreme Devi, come to me. Take me to your realm. Let me walk with you. Let me hold your hand. Deva Mahadev, Shiva and Shakti, Kali and Durga, Aldi Shakti, Mahamaya, Sahirjam, Sahirjam Va, Samana Mantra, Samana Prana, Samana Atma, Samana Paramatmana, Samana Savidya, Samano Mantra, Samano Mona, Samano Orgasm, Samano Janam, Samano Vanam.
Thank you, everybody, for being here with me today. If you feel like you'd like to be doing more, then I'd like you to send an email to the White House Office of Science and Technology and ask them for disclosure. And the instructions are right on the top of galacticroundtable.org. Have a wonderful day. Please come see me tomorrow. Namaste, everybody.